In the internet world, there are these extremely rare moments when an idea just catches fire and goes absolutely crazy. And then there's something like Unsplash. I would bet that the last time you picked up your phone and scrolled through Instagram or the news, you saw at least one, if not many, images that came directly from Unsplash. And in this episode, I interviewed Mikhail Cho, the founder of Unsplash, about the journey of launching the site and all the unexpected success and challenges that have come from building a brand that reached over a billion with a B downloads back in 2019. We dug into some other stuff as well. We talk about using writing to clarify your thoughts, the controversy or opportunity that comes from giving your work away for free, how to be innovative in your business model as much as you are with the business itself, and the very best way to waste your time. Here's our conversation. Mikhail, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Alex.
Yeah, man, I'm excited to talk to you. I've been a huge fan and user of Unsplash for, it seems like, many, many years now. So I guess first off, congratulations. I saw you guys have hit, I guess it was in 2019, but you hit a billion with a B downloads of your images. You're probably getting close to like 2 billion now at this point, but congratulations, man. That's like an unbelievable accomplishment.
Thank you. Yeah. It's a very big number. You know, when you're starting out and you have 10 images, a billion doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I want to hit a lot of things with you today, but let's start there. You said 10 images. So maybe just to like give me the origin story a little bit. I know some of it, but I know basically the bit that I know is it started with 10 photos, and maybe explain the origin of how it all started.
Yeah, Unsplash was an accidental company. So it wasn't supposed to be a company. That was not the intent that we made it. We were working on something else at the time, and we were looking for ways to help that business grow. So Unsplash was an idea that we came up with. What we were thinking through was how could we make something that people can come back to regularly that would be useful for our existing customers and wouldn't take us any time. Mm. So that was the constraints that we put around these original ideas. And the reason we were trying to come up with something was we were building a marketplace for creative talent. We were connecting engineers, designers who had all been vetted for quality with high quality projects. But it would take a long time to build everything we needed inside of that marketplace and that community to really make it work. So we said, well, can we get people sort of hanging around while we build this? And so, yeah, Unsplash was this idea. I had been a designer and just running into this problem of always finding good images that I knew I could use. It sounds like a really simple problem, but I just never thought it was easy. And I'm like, if this is hard for me, I can imagine somebody who is not a designer or a developer who maybe just looking to make a website or a blog or something, and they have no idea where to find these images that they can use them. So that was the original idea. And then we just simplified it from the sense of like, what would we want to exist? And then we worked backwards from there. Mm. So we said, how do we make that world happen? Mm. And we started with images we had shot for our website, for our other company, because we're like, we need to make this just really easy and clear that you know that you can use them for free. Sure. And there wasn't images, tons of good images around that were under those conditions. So we're like, we'll shoot our own, but we can't afford shooting tons of these. So we'll just get like 10 of the best that we have, and we'll do 10 images every 10 days. So that'll be also a reason why people could potentially come back to the site. So in an afternoon, I put up 10 images on a Tumblr blog. It was a $19 Tumblr theme, $9 domain. In a couple hours, it was live, hosted with public Dropbox links, which you're not supposed to do. And I was super embarrassed by it. I'm like, maybe 100 designers, people making websites are going to find this useful, and that's going to be a win for us. Didn't look at it. I just put it on Hacker News. And like, that's a place where stuff often gets shit on anyway. So yeah. I'll put it over there and just leave it.
Right. And turn away. Put it up and turn away.
Yeah. I get a text message from the photographer we had worked with for the images. And he said, where did you put those images? Because my portfolio site is just blowing up right now. And I knew we had only put it in one spot on Hacker News. So I went and checked, and it was number one. There's 300 comments. Mm. It's blowing up. I checked we had used a Google sign up form that tracked in Google Sheets the emails that were signing up. it was just like, you know, there's 20,000 signups that were happening.
Wow.
Image downloads were just flying. Dropbox wrote to me like, hey, we noticed that this thing's really cool that you made, but you got to take it off these public Dropbox links. Right. It's not made for that. So yeah, it was a pretty crazy day one. It was my first time experiencing that after like 4 years of building and playing around with things on the internet.
Yeah, man, that's when I found Unsplash. So I was one of those early Tumblr every 10 days people. And I loved the model back then because I was always excited to see what the new set was going to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think that launch is just so like magical, and like you just kind of hit the sweet spot right in the head. And I think, you know, it's crazy to think now, I don't know if people listening truly understand like the reach of Unsplash today, but it's like, I can almost guarantee anyone listening to this has seen, you know, dozens of Unsplash photos across the internet. It's just this turn to this monolith. But I wonder, like, before Unsplash, were there any, you know, the company that you were building? It's, I don't think you're currently running that anymore. I think everything's kind of turned into Unsplash. Like, that had to create some sort of dissonance if you just kind of strike gold over here, you know, with this, you know, just kind of off the cuff idea to bring people into your existing business. And you're like, there's some dissonance here. This business is like not a business yet, but my existing business is like maybe not doing as much as I thought. Like, what happened there?
Yeah, that happened about a year after we had built that first version of Unsplash. Mm. So we kept updating it, 10 images every 10 days, and it just kept growing and growing. It fulfilled everything and way more than what we wanted it to.
Sure.
It became the number one referral source for our core business. So we're like, this is perfect. It's like a set it and forget it engine of customers who would just keep coming. And then at the end of the year, that's sort of like a reflection period, looked back in and it's just like, this is has more potential than we even originally thought. I was starting to see people use it in all kinds of other use cases. We had to make decisions where now we had, you know, only like 360 images, but people can't find the images anymore because all we had was a scrolling thing from a Tumblr blog. There was no way to search anything.
Sure.
So there was some real decisions then at that point where we said, I think we should probably spin this out. We can still have it be primarily as a referral source, but just building like one or two things on it might get 10 times more you know, customers coming to our core business, which is called Crew.
Gotcha.
So we made that decision and then, yeah, just kept going and going and going. And I think that was really the moment. It was sort of 18 months after it had started. Now we had it, because we had it hosted on its own site, we're harboring that cost.
Yeah.
So now it really needs to make sense as a referral source, but it was just exploding in other ways. Bloggers,
sure,
writers were starting to use it, and that wasn't necessarily referring to the core business anymore.
Yeah.
So that's when we started to think, okay, we need to make a decision about splitting this.
Yeah. Tell me about that decision. That must have been hard because you said 4 years, or at this point, 5.5 building Crew.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had been, I was playing around on the internet for that amount of time, but we had founded the original company in 2012, and this was now 2014. Mm. I've been playing around on the internet since like 2010. But yeah, so 2014 was that moment of, yes, we should split these two. And it wasn't that difficult at the time because there was some naivety that we had. We were like, wait, we have two businesses. Like, we'll split them and, you know, my co-founder, he'll run this one and we'll keep going on Crew. We believe in both of them. Mm. We had investors who had been around the block a few times and seen that. And I was kind of like the CEO of both.
Right.
And that's like a very weird, rare circumstance to be having, especially at a very early stage.
Sure.
So that was when we started to have that be like not as simple as we thought it was going to be.
Mm.
It'd just be splitting it. And then when it kept growing and kept growing and kept growing, we had to make, yeah, there was this decision, because now there's real cost and there's cost that's being associated with hosting all the images for Unsplash. So we had to make a decision. That would have been in 2015, halfway through 2015, when we finally made the decision to spin it out. And yeah, that was a challenging thing because we still believed in the core business. But it's kind of like I looked at it as you have two blackjack hands and one of them is 20 and the other one is 16.
Sure.
You still might make it with the 16 one, but this one is just showing you all these signs that, and it needs the funding, the kind of business that it was, it needs to operate in that sort of way. Whereas our core business, it actually didn't need that much funding. It was almost profitable already at that point. Mm. That's when we made the decision to actually sell it and to have it be acquired by Dribbble.
Okay, cool. I didn't realize that happened. That's a cool transition. Yeah, I can only imagine that must have hurt, you know, because this thing you're building, and it hurt for a bit, you know, because this thing is kind of your baby. You've been working on it for a long time, and I imagine it's has to be somewhat confusing. One other thing I think about with Unsplash was, I want to ask, how long did it take before Unsplash itself made money? Because I feel like it would be really hard in a certain sense, because it's almost like the toothpaste was out of the bottle type of situation. Yeah. Where it's like, we're giving all this amazing high quality photography away for free. And I want to get into like how you guys have been really creative with your business, which I think is like one of the top things I'm most impressed with you with, is like how creative you are on the business side. But I am curious, when did it actually turn into something that made money instead of just cost money to just keep producing all these photos and all this content and hosting it online?
Just last year. So it may have been the worst year to start monetizing, especially through advertising, you know, with what was going on with the pandemic. Okay. But that was our first year. So 2020 was the first year that we truly started monetizing. 2019 was a year of testing and understanding how we could monetize the best way possible. We knew that there was an advertising model that we wanted to start with. We thought there was many models that we were looking at, and even now we're considering. And it's just a matter of how to sequence them and roll them out properly. Mm. The main thing that we especially didn't want to do from 2017, 2020, we're growing a lot. You don't want to get in the way of that growth. So we wanted to figure out what's something that, you know, doesn't require us to get in the way of any of that, that aligns with some other goals of the company as well. So expanding the library, helping the contributors be able to book work. That's sort of another thing that was happening as well. And so involving brands and the work that we're doing with brand advertisers now solved all of those. It sort of hit on all of these things. So just to clarify what we do, we work with someone like Square, and they'll host their images. They'll actually work, in most cases, the brands will work with photographers who are on Unsplash. They'll hire them, and then they'll get these images. They'll post them on search results. They'll pay to promote them to the top. And the idea is, yes, you want to get in front of the Unsplash audience, but really it's about getting in across the audience of the internet. So anyone who's writing about the cash register of the future, you know, the future of credit cards, they're looking for visuals to create with. They come to Unsplash and they're seeing something by Square that's great and beautiful and is useful to them. So that's how we've seen it play out. And it's been just like a totally different way of looking at advertising.
Yeah, man. The first time I saw the landing page for Unsplash for brands, I think I actually smiled at my camera or at my computer, just thinking it just felt like such an aha moment of like clarity of this is the future of what like effective advertising looks like. And at first I think I saw you guys had announced Unsplash for brands a while back, and I was really interested, like, what does that even mean? What could that look like? And then I saw the landing page. I think Jack did images for you guys, which like really clarified and made it look amazing. But I was like, holy shit, this is going to be huge, like massive. Would you kind of explain again, like, so how did you come up with this idea? Because I think it was super creative. And then maybe explain to someone who doesn't know, you know, what it is exactly, like how it will show up in their experience, like how it will come across.
Yeah, my co-founder, Luke, was the first one to really like synthesize this and think about it strategically. What he saw immediately, because he was the one that switched off and was working full-time on Unsplash while I was still kind of doing both between Crew and Unsplash. And he just saw the distribution that was happening on a single image. So we were getting more people, and today that's even more now, but even at the time, so 2-3 years ago, we were getting more people to see a single image than the front page of the New York Times. Mm. So nobody could do that in as quick a period that Unsplash could do. And then it would even get stronger over time. So the idea was simply, what we do for any image, we can do that for any brand. That was the original thesis. And it came back to, we were looking at the market dynamics. You're saying, where is the market going? How are things evolving? What's this going to look like in 10 years? Everybody's got these great cameras on their phones. The creative tools have gotten so much better. So that was the underlying thesis. We're like, people are going to need a lot more images. They're going to want them really accessible. So there's the potential. So with an advertising business, you need it to be massive in order to reach like a real amount of scale. And so when you, if you believe in that future that more people are going to be moving online and creating, and the internet is becoming more visual, and also the cameras are getting better and better and producing high res stuff, all of that is leading to a total shift in the market and an expansion where this would now be possible. Whereas 10 years ago, everybody who was maybe using images in media was professional media buyers and professional creators. So if you're advertising there, that market might not be as big, and the way that licensing was done, you know, it was a different way of thinking about it, and a different progress of and evolution of where photography and photography for use was going.
Yeah.
And so then we went further, and it took us that full year of 2019 to really understand how to speak about it. That made it differentiated and really helped us understand and really stand out to brands as well. Because so much of advertising is like speaking directly about the audience that you have. And you're going to sell to this audience, you're going to target them. And that was not, we knew that wasn't the right pitch for Unsplash, but we didn't know what the right pitch for Unsplash was yet.
Sure.
And so we just kept, we'd go in these meetings, we'd pitch. And I was in them because I wanted to understand and learn how we should communicate this best before we went and scaled it. And over time, it just sort of refined to this thing where it's not even about reaching the audience that's on Unsplash. You want to reach them so that they become the vehicle for your brand. They take your visual around for you because you're being useful in the first place.
Right.
So the real way that this works and where you show up, a brand will, you know, they'll pay for impressions that are happening on Unsplash.com in those search results. But when someone goes and takes that and puts that out, you might get 10 times more people seeing that now when that writer uses it in a Forbes article.
Totally.
Or a Medium article, or you're doing a presentation and it's in your keynote, you know, and everybody is seeing that and people are actually paying attention. So that's the big difference. You know, it's not so much of advertising right now is you're choosing an audience because you're trying to make sure that there's no waste, but all of interruption advertising is just waste.
Right.
It's like 96% of people aren't paying attention to it. So what you're trying to do is that 4%, you're trying to optimize it. Okay, let's make sure this 4% is the right people that are probably going to buy our product. Or you can make something that's useful that ends up in the prime real estate of the content that someone's creating. So 100% of the people are paying attention and it's in a context that makes sense. So you're able to shift perceptions. You're able to help people understand more of what your brand does visually, which is another way of connecting people. So yeah, in many ways, it's very different from the interruption-based models that have primarily run the internet.
Right. That's what hit me right away. And I think you guys have done such a great job of kind of explaining what it is. But for me, it was like, this is, you know, like you said, I don't pay attention to ads basically at all. If I see them on my computer, anywhere on my screen, I've trained my mind to avoid them. You know what I mean? Because it's like everyone's selling me something I'm trying to avoid, or maybe 4% of the time they work max. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what I thought was insane about this idea was that it's no longer on those fringe parts where your photos are going to be. They're exactly where everyone's looking, and they're integrated in a way that's, you know, kind of delightful. They're enhancing the content experience. Why you end up on a Forbes article, a lot of it has to do with a beautiful image that's redirecting someone there. And like, to me, I just felt like it was so innovative and so clear. But I imagine that iteration of coming to that had to have been really, really tough. Because to me and anyone else on the outside, it's like, wow, that seems so obvious, like so obvious that, you know, you use a Square card reader or you use a Chromebook or maybe it's Microsoft. I'm not sure which the brand you guys are working with, but you use one of these devices and all of a sudden they're showing up in every photo all over the internet talking about laptops or card readers. And it's like so clear and obvious, but that had to have taken a ton of iteration.
Yes, 300 plus meetings. You know, just to give a sense. So yeah, through all of that, that's kind of what it takes to get it to the essence and then be scaling it from there.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was a lot of work that went into figuring out just crystallizing it and understanding the best way to present it.
Yeah. I want to ask too, like, how do you guys at Unsplash, like when it comes to choosing a direction to move, How do you know where to focus versus where to stop focusing? Like how often are you coming up with ideas and then cutting out ideas and that kind of process? Like, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. Your company is working at like this crazy scale. You have to have a way of focusing well. But I imagine, especially with the scale and the level of opportunity you have, like it just seems fraught for a distraction. How do you know what to focus on and when?
Yeah, we're always coming up with ideas. Ideas will just happen and they'll come everywhere throughout the team. And we just keep a log. So people will just sort of dump that in. It's not prioritized at all. They might even keep it. And then every 6 weeks, we have a 6 week roadmap. That's where we have the discussions. So that's the prioritization. And these projects will make their way into that. But it needs somebody to have been thoughtful about it and to think through how this could actually work. Part of what gives an idea legs is the ability for the person who has the idea to convince people. And it should be clear enough and strong enough of an idea to convince somebody. That's sort of the bar that we put as a standard.
Yeah.
And if if you still feel strongly about it and no one's convinced, then maybe that what you're using to convince needs to be even more convincing. Right. So sometimes if I thought of something and the best way actually to communicate it where it's convincing is I can whip something up really fast, like a first version, and just like tweet it out and see what happens. That sometimes will be the first version. And so we still operate a lot in the way of how we did in the early days. Yeah. That's how we did a lot of stuff where it was test this idea, make sure that the unique thing that you built is in that first version, even if it's really, really simple. And you can feel this in the first version of Unsplash.
Yeah.
You know, it was really simple and really basic, but the core essence was still there, but with minimal cost.
Sure.
And that's effectively what we're always aiming for early versions of ideas.
Yeah. Can you tell me, and it's okay if you can't, can you tell me a few ideas that you've killed or stopped working on that were hard decisions to make?
Hard decisions. So there's easy decisions. There's ones that like,
okay.
Yeah. That's obvious. That one's obvious. That one kind of like put that to the, usually it's just a matter of it's not big enough to warrant the resources right now. It's usually like a right now thing. Like the ideas are usually good, but we just need to table them. So we did have an early idea. Well, we had a good partner that was lined up that wanted to do this. It seemed like a kind of obvious thing, like doing prints of the visuals. Like people wanted to print these almost like an IKEA, but you could get all the Unsplash images and get them just straight delivered, really high quality if you wanted that thing on your wall.
Cool.
And we had been hit up for it so many times in so many ways. And some of us kind of believed in it as a potential thing. So we ran a quick test and we put a button on a few of these. And some of these tests, you need to go further, right? You need to like really make a commitment to it in order to see if it's going to work. And that's where we came out after this test. We're like, if we're going to do this, this can't just be a little test, because what we learned from the test is people come into Unsplash looking to download an image, and that's the core action. That's all they're thinking about. If it was about like being able to get a print and use this visual, and we wanted that to actually be something that people did, you'd have to sort of reprogram the thinking of how people came into the site. There might be some landing page or some graphic that you're showing that people can do this, and that's just going to be way more commitment than we think is worth at this time.
Sure.
So that's like something that we shelved.
Yeah. I like the idea, but I can see why. Yeah, for me and all my times using the site, I think my behavior is just so quick. I'm just searching, trying to find the image that works for me, get in, get out, you know. So yeah, I could see that being tough. I'm curious, this might be a weird question, but what's been the scariest season of running Unsplash for you?
Season meaning like actual season?
I just mean season of life. Like what's been the scariest time? Time of running the company.
I got it. That part, that spin out part. So when we spun it out and we had a little bit of cash left to run Unsplash, but it was only enough cash for a year. And we knew that we had to raise money. And we had all this, I would call it like company debt. And so you have technical debt and then you have company debt. Company debt is we had a previous company like from Canada going to raise money. This is new, like doesn't have monetization. It's it's all these like little weird things that you're, this is like baggage that you're carrying with you going into this new financing. I didn't actually think it would be as big of a deal as it was in some cases. I thought growth would solve a lot of things.
Yeah.
We had a ton of growth. But I also think, you know, reflecting in those moments how you could have done things better. You know, maybe there's a certain way that I was speaking about it and pitching it. But that was a tough time to, there was a lot of people who were interested. And then we met those people like from an investment perspective. And it was this big roller coaster, like getting really close. And then people have been like, we're not sure. And then coming back and then this, and you're on your last like 4 or 5 months of capital. And you just keep going on these trips. You know, you're going to New York, you're going to San Francisco and trying to make that happen. And then once it clicks, it all just kind of, the dominoes just fall in like a month and you end up raising like an $11 million round.
Yeah.
You know, but that period of just switching companies from day one, you wake up the next day and now you're doing another company. That's effectively what happened to me. You're going right into a fundraise, essentially. So it's like you're starting over, you know, and you had already done 4 years of really like in the trenches work, early stage, and now you're just boom, dropped in again, day one, starting over, going right into like a fundraise again.
Yeah.
So that was a very challenging period.
Yeah. How did you manage? I presume you had at least a few people working for you on both Unsplash and the crew side. As you're leading the team through this season, that also has to be complicated because, I mean, what did you learn about, you know, leading through that type of transition? That had to have been tough on top of it. It's stressful enough on your own, let alone having people who are relying on you.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, so the Unsplash team at that time then was 4, and then we expanded it to like 7 people. We had just a few people switching over from crew, and the team had already worked together for so long. You know, we had a bunch of us already worked together, crew, that was kind of on autopilot, and we weren't doing a ton of hiring. So it was easy for us to focus on, you know, on the fundraise.
Yeah.
So I largely could just, focused on fundraising, and my co-founders really stepped up in that moment to help lead the team. And that was a lot easier than the first time that we did it, you know, for crew in the previous business where I was, we didn't even know how to do it. Like I was just so inexperienced there. Like I'm running the company. That's like the experience that a lot of people have when they're fundraising. Cause usually your product is really, really early. In the case of Unsplash, I still feel building a great product that people really want just makes so many things easier. Mm. It just didn't need much. Like we did everything that you're not supposed to do in the first year of Unsplash, and it just still grew.
Dig into that. What were the things you did that you weren't supposed to?
So I didn't do any work on it. You know, it's like I'm working 99% on this other thing.
Yeah.
I'm spending 1 hour every 10 days. We're not paying attention to it. Made no improvements. Yeah, just like not even thinking about it ever.
Yeah.
Like, that's the polar opposite of what you're supposed to do. But you see this when an idea is so good, you know, and it just hits like the market. They really want it. And the way you built it resonates so much that word of mouth, you just can't stop it.
Right.
Like we could have just done nothing, and which we basically did, and it would just keep growing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. I think, you know, kind of pivoting away from that, I think there's an interesting conversation to be had about where Unsplash kind of lies in like the creator community. I wonder, you know, I have a few questions for you around about, have you ever faced criticism for giving away photographs for free? Like, has that ever been a point of contention for the brand?
Yeah. Yeah. So it happened. I didn't expect it to happen. And this was some naivety as well, because I'd never been in that position building a company that had risen so much inside of an industry to that level where it was actually noticed by people. Mm. Like it just sort of happened. We were writing to some photographers to tell them about Unsplash. And then I think it just spread in a circle of professional photographers. It got really pissed. They have brought it up online and they're like, don't do anything with Unsplash. And I was so confused by it. I was like, this is strange. This is not our intent at all. The intent is to just be useful. Put your leftovers, do something, you know, like extra images and that you're not doing anything with and you get something from this. This was like 2017. And then, so that was the first time we really wrote a piece about how we saw the industry and why this was something that you should maybe consider. Like, this is where it's going. You can use Unsplash in your toolkit, even if you're a professional photographer. And you see this in all kinds of like disruptive communication things that happen online. So you saw this with blogging. And when blogging started, everyone's like, no one's going to buy books anymore. You know, everyone's writing online for free. The opposite has happened.
Yeah. Right?
There's more people publishing, more ideas getting out there now. And I see a similar thing, like the appreciation for photography has never been more.
Right.
The impact has never been greater.
Totally.
What we did is we said, well, all these other networks are super saturated. So like Instagram, you have 95 million, you know, images are posted a day. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how are you ever going to, you know, stand out from that at this point? So if you looked at what's the next evolution of that, we said, well, there's technically like a license always attached to an image when someone creates it. But what value sits there and holding on to that license today? Mm. And we did the math. Like if you looked at what, like on a per contributor basis, what was happening on like something like Shutterstock, it was getting cut in half every 2 years. So you'd make like less than $1,000. If you took all your images you had and put them up, you'd make less than $1,000 a year. That's not a living for somebody.
Sure.
Really where you make a living in photography is in the custom work.
Yes.
So you could leverage something like an Unsplash to, hey, this is your work. Take 10 of your images, show the world what you can do. Just set it and forget it and let the downstream opportunities happen if they're going to happen. Hey, I really like that shot that you took of bridge. Could you shoot that
totally
of this bridge? So that's where we saw it going. And I think I went on even some calls with people because I understand why this happens. People just come from different backgrounds.
Yep.
Right. It's like you're going to feel potentially threatened if this platform comes up and you've been a professional photographer your whole life, been making a living that whole time. And so I looked at it as really just trying to understand and how are we all going to evolve together? Now it's our responsibility because we're in this position to also think about where is this going to go in the future and how should that be designed?
Yeah. It makes me think of, and I'm curious about your response, like thoughts on this comparison, but my background is in music before, you know, I've been in podcasting for years, but before that I was writing music for film and TV. I had bands, I did the whole thing. And a common thing I hear about is musicians who are so upset at Spotify or Apple Music, and they have this argument that, well, they're not paying us what we're worth or whatever it is. And for me, I guess because I'm somewhat business minded, I've always thought like, well, Spotify can't be your end business model. Even as a musician, like if you want this to be your job, at least in 2021, Spotify should be like the main discovery tool for people finding your music. I, you know, I've had so many conversations where people are like, well, I'm getting paid half of a pay.
Yeah. All these industries that evolve.
Exactly.
And they're just evolving at different paces. And a lot of it is, you know, there's new external technologies that are created that are really moving things forward. So in the case of something like the photography world, what really catalyzed things was the quality of the camera that exists in the phone.
Mm.
That changed things a lot. And then the evolution of the distribution network. So things like Instagram, when those things came up, that just changed the evolution time spent.
Right. Yeah. I think with the music thing, I've heard, you know, for me, the argument I've always made is if you want, things just aren't going to be the way they always were. And I think this is somewhat of an unpopular opinion that I've gotten into arguments about, but I think if you're a musician in 2021, you can't rely on a Spotify to be your main source of income, however much you'd like that to be. That has to be used as a discovery tool, because the other argument I've made is, well, yeah, you're not making a ton on it, but thousands and thousands of more people are finding you because of Spotify. So it opens up to this opportunity to be like, well, can you get them on Patreon? Give them exclusive stuff. Can you get them in some sort of membership model? Can you do exclusive things? Like, there are all these creative ways that you can generate business. And I think the Unsplash model is like, and I think you've actually addressed this, where you can straight up hire photographers through Unsplash now for work. But what's so powerful about it is like you put your work in front of literally the world. And then all of a sudden it's like the craziest funnel you could ever ask for to getting new business to your photography work. And I just think like there's something to be said about being discovered. And then, you know, like you said, getting hired for custom work is where the power is.
Yeah. So much of these markets are just demand driven. It's like, what do the customers want? And that's how things keep evolving over time. And so that evolution, you can't stop it. Like, the change is just going to keep happening. And you'll see certain musicians who understand that, and they'll always be looking ahead to try to figure that out. So this is, and you'll see new musicians crop up because they've taken advantage of that change that they saw coming. So that's something like Chance the Rapper was doing. You know, he's using SoundCloud. Even Kanye was dropping stuff for free. And because they knew that, like, okay, this isn't a change. I'm going to embrace this. And by embracing it, I can figure out this new world that's going to potentially exist.
Yeah. As a, like, in the conversations you had with photographers, like, what have you learned about, like, that side of it that maybe made you think twice or think differently? And then maybe talk about, like, what you're doing with the artists discovering now on the platform.
Yeah, I think the big worry for, like, professional photographers is Unsplash is going to eat into the work that you might have booked. And I think it might do a little bit of that, but still there's so much of, like, if what's the alternate, right? So most of these people, they've got the camera, right? They have a high quality camera in their hand and they saw this. Okay, maybe I can't get, this is what used to happen. You'd see it on, like, Shutterstock or something. Okay, I can't get that image. Now what if I have a high quality camera in my pocket? I'm going to shoot something that's good enough, you know, and I'll use that, you know, if I need to do that, if I don't have the cash. If I do have the cash, maybe I'll hire someone who's close to me, or I'll be able to find something like that. But what happens with something like Unsplash is now they can hire you, right? Mm. Because you're going to be there. You're going to be on the platform. And I looked at it as something like, this is something that GitHub did too. So GitHub, what they did with code, they posted libraries of stuff that people were working on. Open source was there as well. So effectively giving code away. But through that, GitHub became just this massive, like, hiring platform. Mm. And that's really where it was. The value was there. It wasn't in trying to withhold your code IP, you know, and then license out that IP. Like, that just wasn't what was really valuable there. And I think there's a similar thing that was happening in photography. There wasn't much value that was left. And this was before Unsplash, much value left in trying to hold these licenses. Yes, there's going to be top 1% of the photographers who are known, who are going to get hit up for licensing their work. But what about everybody else?
Right.
You know, they're not making anything from that licensing. And the licensing in a lot of cases is holding it back. That image could just be sitting somewhere else that could create other things. Like, we've talked a lot about the Unsplash image is like a relationship maker. Yeah. You put it there and a whole bunch of stuff can just start happening.
Right. I think that's true. I think that leads into, like, how you think about, maybe even outside of Unsplash, but just, like, people making things on the internet and how it spreads. I see you tweet about this pretty often, and you think about, it's clear you're thinking about it all the time. I mean, maybe what are some things you think about or some pieces of advice for people who are wanting to get into making stuff on the internet? Like, what are some things that you think about or have been thinking about lately that would be cool for somebody to test out or try?
Yeah, like, I've got lots of ideas that I think should exist. There's just so many improvements in so many areas of the world and things that you could do. So I think the first thing is just documenting those. And I think a lot of people will say it in passing. They'd be like, this thing should be better. Like, for example, we live in a condo building and I think this could be totally run way better. And there could be so many things that could be done much better here.
Yeah.
And I know there's services especially in the US that are, I'm in Canada now, and I know in the US there's things that are existing that are improving this. But, like, if there wasn't, there'd be ideas that I would be like, this could be improved, this could be this. And it sort of crystallizes into, like, a one sentence solution to some problem that could probably exist. And I just document that. And so if I was thinking, you know, if I wasn't doing Unsplash and just, like, a fresh slate and it was just sitting there, I'd probably be communicating thoughts and ideas, like, just putting those out in public. Like, the internet allows you to do that really easily. This is why I'm on Twitter. A lot of the reason why I like Twitter is it improves your writing. It's like a function of learning. It helps you just crystallize to really, really basic things. I even try, in a lot of cases, I know, like, threads are a big deal on Twitter. I try not to do threads. I try to keep it in a single tweet to the to really just crystallize and take something down to its essence.
Yeah.
So there's the there's this improvement of your ability to communicate, and a lot of people, they understand sort of the future is whoever the best storyteller is, that's who's going to win. Right. So if you can keep communicating better, keep moving that skill forward, even if it's just random thoughts and ideas, but you keep trying to say it better.
Yeah.
So if you move that skill forward and then you have this log of like ideas, eventually you're going to find probably a mix between those two. So now you're a great communicator and you have this idea that now you can help move forward at the same time. So you've developed a skill that not a lot of people have. And now you potentially have an idea that you can attach that skill to. So even if you don't like want to jump in, you don't even have an idea yet that you really feel that crazy about building, you can still develop that storytelling skill.
Sure. And that's the skill that can kind of cross over into anything. If you're good at telling the story, you're good at communicating ideas, you're going to be good at making something happen for yourself. I keep hearing you say something. Are you obsessed with making things better? Do you think about it all the time? Are you like always thinking about improving? Like even the condo building thing is funny to me of like, are you just examining, kind of noticing these things throughout your life that you're like, that could be better? Because I'm this way. Like my wife and I will go somewhere and we'll be waiting in a line for something. And I'll just be thinking, this line could be so much more efficient in like 9 different ways. I don't know. Do you think that way about everything?
Yeah, it's really hard to stop doing that. You know, when you do it all day and you're thinking in the company context and you go out and you see it everywhere. Yeah, you see how everything can, why do I need a key for this? You know, why can't this be? A lot of it is, I've just really felt the importance of time, especially in the last few years, and really understood that, how valuable and how irreplaceable time is. So anything that fucks with my time, I really try to think about how that could be improved.
Yeah.
And I know there's a line, like your whole time that you're spending that you created shouldn't be thought consistently about how to improve more time.
Right.
That's a trap that often happens, right? Like people get into productivity and then it's just all their time is spent that they created from the productivity is thinking about how to be even more productive.
Right.
So I think you reach a level where that system is good.
Yeah.
You know, but then there's ones where you can really feel it's still broken.
Yeah.
And all right. So it's like, how do we level this up? How do we make this 10 times better to create more time?
Sure. What made you start thinking more about your time?
I think there was, turn 34 now. So kind of turning 30, it was slow and fast, right? So it's like, I can recall certain things. They just feel, wow, we just did that last year in the company. But then I'll see the time scale and I'll be like, oh, we started the company when I was 22 and 30. You know, so it's like this, these like weird, it's slow and fast at the same time in these realizations. And you become aware your parents are getting older and you're seeing what's happening. And I actually, one of the things I like to do is I listen to oldies music, like 60s, 70s. I know some people will be like, oldies, 60s. But like 60s, 70s, 80s, I like the music. That's one reason. But the other reason is it kind of puts you back in that time frame. And those people were massive. Like Lionel Richie was massive at that time.
Yeah.
And you can see, like when I listen to it with my wife's parents or my parents, they'd like teleport back to that time. And that time was the same as this time.
Yes.
Right. Except it's us and The Weeknd now. You know, it's like, but it's going to happen. It's just this like cycle and it makes you aware of the cycle.
Yeah.
That's the power of that. So I'm like, don't get caught in that cycle because everyone's in that cycle. And then it just flies by and we're just, it's the new music and it's the new, you know, the play just keeps going and going. Totally. And then you're old, you know?
Exactly.
So I try to think that's what that music helps me do is be really present, trying not to just waste time away. I've thought of other examples where I started stopping watching a lot of sports. And the reason was, I was like, who would I be back in Roman times if I'm watching sports? It would kind of be the people who sat in the and watched the gladiators, you know, and cheered them on and bet on them. And in hindsight, 2000 years later or 3000 years later, that looks like a giant fucking waste of time. You know, if you could teleport yourself back, would you be spending, you know, all your weeks every night watching, you know, the gladiators fight? No, you'd probably be hanging out with Plato and you'd be going and doing some other stuff. You know, that's super interesting. So I've used like the history as a way to kind of break that cycle and learn about not repeating those patterns today.
Yeah, that resonates with me. I think especially if you're kind of oriented, your orientation to time is in the future, which it sounds like it probably is for you. You're probably always thinking about what's next, what's ahead, especially being a founder of a company. And I think finding ways to be present, that is so valuable because, yeah, I mean, I'm 29 now, but I just turned 29 in January, and it was a tough one for me because it was like, holy shit, like I'm not 22 anymore or something, you know? Yeah. And you know, the dumb cliches we heard growing up of like, life goes quick, life goes fast. Yeah. It's all becoming more real to me of like, oh my God, it does.
Yeah.
And there's something I can do about that, of just like trying to be more present and not let the whole thing just slip by, because I'm living so much in the future, wherever is not even here yet, or the past, that I'm not even here now. I just think that there's power in finding ways to be present.
Yeah, there's this weird dynamic of being creative and making something impactful usually involves you turning yourself into a robot. So you like automate a bunch of things, you build a routine, and you're able to do that. And that becomes like, you're so consistent. But what routines do is they speed up time because you're on autopilot.
Right.
Right. So that's one of the dichotomies that you have to fight with to be present at the same time. So you can like break there's moments to break the routine. So when I'm home, you know, coming home after work and I put my phone down, that's the break, the habit break. Mm. And I'm not looking to optimize time. I'm not looking to do any of that stuff. It's like, I've thought of this concept of like waste time with the ones you love.
Mm.
So that's where you waste the time. You just waste it. Like let it go wherever. My daughter's like retying her shoe over and putting it on and taking it off, putting it on. Waste that time.
Yeah. Man, that's powerful. I like that. I think that's a good way to end. And I think all of us could stand to waste times with the ones we care about, because I think that's the best way to live life. Well,
yeah,
man, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Is there anything, you know, coming up for Unsplash? Anything we missed that you are especially excited to talk about?
No, you covered a lot of it at the new year. Yeah, we put up the visual search, which I'm super excited about. It's not just like, what I think is really cool about it is you can go and find any visual, even like a licensed visual, drop it into Unsplash and we'll give you one that's unlicensed that you can use.
Mm.
So super useful for any creative work that you're doing. And I just see the future of what that could evolve into.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, as you mentioned, what we're doing with hiring, I think is really interesting. It's the ability to go into custom work, help the people who want to go in that direction, who are photographers on Unsplash. I think that's going to be very powerful for them. There's people who are fulfilled and contributing on Unsplash for very different reasons, but that's one of the reasons for some people. And I think it's exciting to be able to cover essentially the entire market, right? So you've got, these are the use cases. It's just like, I need a visual, I'm blogging right now. And then you've got a brand who, you know, needs something custom for a big campaign that they're running, and we're able to cover that whole thing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Cool, man. That's exciting. Any photographers out there, go put your stuff on Unsplash right away. You'd be crazy not to, in my opinion. Where can people find you online?
Twitter's good. So my first name and last name, at okay. Mikhail Cho.
Awesome. I'll put that in the show notes too. Well, Mikhail, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Look forward to following along the Unsplash journey.
Thanks, Alex.
That was Mikhail Cho. If you're on Twitter, you need to give him a follow. He is always dropping knowledge bombs and showcasing great new ideas there. And while you're at it, go to Unsplash. Check out the work he's doing there. And thanks again for joining me, Mikhail. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and review. As a new show, the more reviews we get, the more people can find out about the show and support it. You can also follow me on Twitter at Alex_Sugg and let me know what you think of the podcast as a whole. And I will be back soon with another new episode. But until then, thank you for listening to Brave World.